This is Kit Trioner, the voice of the Green Arrow.
This is George Newbern, the voice of Superman.
You are listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam.
Streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
The original Justice League has become a memory.
I am resigning from the Justice League.
What's going to happen to the League now?
We rebuild. From the ashes of that great conflict, a new team has arisen. A much, much bigger team.
Each of you brings something different to the table.
Old friends, new heroes. And as usual, plenty of bad guys jumping up to get beat down.
Calm down, and I'll let you go.
How about you kiss my ass?
Watch out, evildoers. There's nowhere to run. Because this year, they're all around you. The League is unlimited. Original series starring every superhero worth cheering for and then some. Justice League Unlimited.
Where am I exactly?
Among friends.
There's strength in numbers.
Welcome everybody to episode 305 of the DCAU Reveal. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs our social media pages, it's Liam. Liam, we are continuing here. We kicked off last week with our very first episode of the month. We turned the page. We switched series. We're talking about Justice League Unlimited all month long. And we kicked off with the premiere of Season 3 last week, an interesting one, some callbacks, some things to look forward to for the rest of the series. And we have another one, Episode 2, this week. And it pretty much takes a complete break from any other storytelling from the overarching themes from this season. Although I guess it does get paid off later on in the season.
Absolutely, yes. This is all about Hawk Girl Shayera and the secrets of her past and how she came to be. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting episode, and also. It introduces a character that until the point that this episode aired, I think we all thought had already been introduced. That being the character of Hawkman, and in the aforementioned episode, Shadow of the Hawk.
That's right. We'll be talking Shadow of the Hawk today, which I guess I also sort of buried the lead. It does continue and move forward our love triangle between Vixen and John Stewart and Shayera, and turn it into a weird sort of love square, I guess, mm-hmm. at this point. So it does pick up on some threads, of course, that was an overarching thread that started way back in Justice League. So lots to talk about today. Excited to do so with you, Liam. But before we do, we will, of course, get the official IMDb synopsis for this week's episode, which originally aired here in the United States of America on September the 17th, 2005. And as we talked about, these are the most recent episodes. This final season of Justice League Unlimited is the last running series, at least to date, on terrestrial television. So these episodes are 18 years old, coming up on their 19-year anniversary here in just a few months. The official IMDb synopsis will be read to us shortly by Liam, but before we get him to do that in his best announcer voice, we will remind you at home, as we do each and every week, that this segment is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower, or if you're already on The Pod Tower, look for @The Pod Tower. And subscribe today. And not only will you get our entire catalog, perhaps you're migrating all of your podcasts over to YouTube. Now you can listen to us directly on there. We're streaming specifically on the Pod Tower YouTube channel. And when you subscribe to that YouTube channel, you'll get new episodes delivered each and every week. Not only that, but you will also get great episodes from the folks at Watchtower Database, who are doing their ongoing series, Jump on the Batwagon. And then, of course, the entirety of the Tim Talk podcast is also there, available in one convenient space for your listening enjoyment. That's youtube.com/The Pod Tower. Head over today and subscribe.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Shadow of the Hawk, which was written by J.M. DeMatteis and Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Dan Reva. music by Michael McQuestion and animation by DR Movie Co. And that synopsis reads as such. Shaira is approached by an archaeologist who is convinced that he is the reincarnated husband of a previous incarnation of her.
I feel like that could have been worded a little bit less confusingly. I mean, it's a confusing concept, but that doesn't clarify.
I think you could have just said reincarnated husband. I feel like the
yes,
reincarnated husband of a previous incarnation of her is kind of, that's a bit redundant. It's kind of, if you're someone's reincarnated husband, then yes, that would make you a husband from a past life. So it's a little redundant to say the least, but that is sort of what the gist of it is. But there's a little bit more to it that we can get into here.
Yeah, absolutely. We kick things off, Liam, as we enter into our own synopsis here. We kick things off with a instant battle. I think we're developing a pattern here. We've noticed that these cold opens that are not very cold at all, that start with the episodes, not only are they more than just the standard like 20 to 30 second introduction, but they are just action packed sequences. And I dare say this is probably one of the highest action sequences of the entire episode, because so much of the episode requires some dialogue and some just a lot of talking happening. But this initial introduction here that we get to the episode, we see a fight occurring between some of the members of our Justice League, which of course include Batman, Vixen, John Stewart, and Shaira. Did I miss anybody else? I don't think anybody else was involved in the fight.
That's all.
That didn't get a shout out. So they're all doing battle with a group who is not named in for the episode, but canonically, we're not sure if they're named this, but at least in the comics, they're known as the Extremists, which is Dream Slayer, Gorgon, Lord Havoc, and Tracker. Sorry.
Tracer.
Couldn't read my own handwriting. Tracer. Who they're all pastiches, interestingly enough, Liam, for Marvel villains. Did not know that until reading the DCAU wiki today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a Lord Havoc being Dr. Doom, mm-hmm. Dream Slayer being Dormammu, the Doctor Strange villain, Tracer is Sabretooth, and I believe the fourth guy, whose name Gorgon, is Dr. Octopus. So.
That's right. Yeah, we have a little bit of action happening here, a little battle that occurs. And in the midst of it, we see that Vixen gets initially overwhelmed by Dream Slayer and is thankfully John Stewart is there to rescue her with a very impressive bubble containing this Dormammu wannabe Dream Slayer, who is who really he knocks himself out with the powerful bubble. And in the fight also happening, we have Shaira also taking place, kicking some serious tail as well. And then once everything gets wrapped up, the heroes prevail. We have a little bit of conversation happening between all of our leaguers, and standing off to the side and crossing the police line and insisting that he speak with Shaira is a man that we will come to know as an archaeologist who is super excited to show Shaira exactly what he's found on one of his digs.
Get back behind the police line.
I can't do that, Shaira. I've been hoping to talk to you for a very long time.
And you are?
Carter Hall. I want to show you something. Easy. It's an artifact, not a weapon. Well, actually, it's both. Ah!
Thanagarian.
All the Thanagarian tech that was left behind after the war was either confiscated or destroyed.
Most, not all.
Thanagarian contraband sells for big bucks on the black market.
Where'd you get this?
In Egypt, during an archaeological dig. It's not from the invasion. It's been on Earth for over 8,000 years. You're Thanagarian. With your help, I could translate the glyphs, figure out how the technology got there. We could investigate this together. Come with me to Egypt.
Cairo's beautiful this time of year. I could recommend some nice restaurants.
We'll examine the artifact and get back to you when we know something. Thank you, Mr. Hall.
The Metro Tower has some of the most advanced scientific equipment on the planet.
Okay. While they run their tests, maybe you and I can discuss this in more detail. Over dinner?
Oh, I don't... Okay. Sure.
He asks if Shaira would be willing to come translate some of the glyphs. He says that he found not only on this particular weapon, but also within a particular pyramid on one of his archaeological digs. He feels like it could help him perhaps learn a little bit more about what the story is behind them. And he dates the blade to be about 8,000 years old, having been on Earth for about 6,000 BC. So he requests her help. Batman, as we said, immediately suspects there's something up and doesn't trust Carter. Neither does John Stewart, who, much to Vixen's chagrin, is being a little bit protective of Shaira, and they insist that they're going to take it to the Metro Tower, and they're going to do their own sort of research with the technology they have there. Carter agrees to allow them to do that, but instead he offers to take Shaira out to dinner, and perhaps they can discuss more over dinner. And while initially she's hesitant, she ultimately agrees, thinking, "What the heck?" Yeah. Almost, and I don't know if this was, it seems like the point there that our writers of the episode, Mr. DeMatteis, as well as Dwayne McDuffie, perhaps were alluding that she was doing it more to make John jealous than anything else. She kind of looks at him and then says, "What the heck?" So we know that there's clearly some interest here, and there's still some unspoken attraction between the two of them, and despite the fact that John is with Vixen during this time frame. So we go back to the Metro Tower, and as Batman decides to run some tests on the blade, we get this interesting interaction between John and Shaira in one of the elevators, as he's shocked to see her dressed up very fancy, ready for her date. There's some less than innocent flirtation that goes back and forth. Shaira chides him a little bit and reminds him that she can tell him exactly where to get the same outfit for his girlfriend Vixen if he's that interested in it.
Shaira, I wanted to... Judas Priest!
Problem?
No. It's just, I've never seen you in a dress before.
You don't like it?
It's, fetching.
If you want one for Vixen, I can tell you where I got it.
Listen.
And just as it seems that they're about to make what Batman refers to as a bad decision, the Batman interrupts and gives them the news about the source of the weapon. I love that Batman suggest, and you just kind of leave it hanging there. He says, "Glad I caught you two before you made a bad decision." And Hawkgirl is taken aback and says, "What? Excuse me?" As if he was insinuating that they were about to become intimate in some sort of way. And Batman just plays it off as if he's talking about the fact that she was about to go on this date with this Carter Hall guy.
"Glad I caught you before you did something stupid."
"Excuse me?"
"Carter Hall."
"What about him?"
"I did some research. His birth name is Joseph Gardner."
"You lie."
"No. 6 months ago, he had it legally changed to Carter Hall. He's an archaeologist, currently curator of the Midway City Museum. Had an excellent reputation until about 5 years ago, when he started claiming that aliens landed in ancient Egypt."
"Aliens? Well, then he must be a lunatic, because we all know that there's no life on other planets."
"There's more."
"What?"
"Our Mr. Hall spends quite a bit of time on the internet."
"Dang, lock him up."
"He frequents the I Hate Hawkgirl bulletin boards."
"That doesn't mean... boards? How many are there?"
57. Web rings. Unaffiliated sites number in the hundreds.
"Forget I asked."
"Hall keeps getting banned from them for flaming the anti-Shaira posters."
"So he's a fan?"
"He's a stalker."
He also reveals a little bit of a backstory about our Carter Hall fella, and that is that he was recently changed his name from Joseph Gardner, which is apparently potentially a Easter egg reference to a couple of Hawkman's co-creators, both Gardner Fox and Joe Kubert, who were responsible for collaborating on the Silver Age incarnation of this character. Mm-hmm. Mr. Fox, who was responsible for co-creating also the Golden Age character. So pretty neat little nod there. We know our creators love giving those shout outs to the original mm-hmm. creators whenever they can. But we reveal that he's recently changed his name to Carter Hall, and that he frequents the I Hate Hawk Girl bulletin boards, which you gotta love this. Carter Hall is a internet troll.
That's right. But he's on the side of the angels, so to speak, and that he keeps getting banned from the anti-hot girl forums for being pro-hot girl, which is a really
it's like those
a people, really funny note.
Oh yeah, like no real world implications here. Mm-hmm. Like nobody would ever go on, like, say, you know, a politically charged thread on Reddit and simply go in there and troll the people that front on the opposite side. No one would get any sick twisted enjoyment out of doing that.
Absolutely not. I mean, and again, this is like he's a true poster through and through. Like, this is the height of, like, internet message boards and flame wars and stuff like this. Yes, this is he's a true poster, this Carter Hall.
That's right, absolutely. So as Batman reveals this, he continues to warn her that he could possibly be a stalker, John suggests at this point that if she's going to insist on going on this date, that she take back up with her, to which she sort of cocks her eyebrow and is immediately apprehensive over. But John assures her that he wasn't talking about him. He meant take Batman or something like that. we know that Shire is not much for taking advice, especially from an ex at this point. But that leaves her to walk away. And Batman and John sort of have this conversation, which references why John still feels so attached to Shire at this point. Not only is she an ex, but he alludes to, we have not covered the episode yet, but of course the Once in Future Thing episode where they travel to the future, and spoiler alert, they may or may not meet somebody that may be the offspring of John and Shire. So we'll save that for another episode to talk about. But
spoiler, that's coming this year though, because if you've been following along, you'll know The Call is the next two episodes of Batman Beyond on the docket for us. So that'll be here before you know it.
There you go. Absolutely. Stay tuned, as we say. But yeah, so Batman reminds him that even though he feels destiny lies before him, that he's going to end up with her, because how could they have a kid together if they aren't ending up together? And Batman says, if he really believes that, then why is he still with Vixen? So we're all kind of focusing on what it means to be twin flames and eternal destination and all of that stuff here.
And Batman's a real pot stirrer in this episode.
He's
giving everybody a little bit of guff.
He is. He's needling everybody anywhere and any place he can.
This isn't right.
I know. But don't.
No, I mean, this shouldn't be happening. When we traveled to the future, we met my son, mine and Shire's. We're supposed to be together. It's our destiny.
If you really believe that, why are you still with Vixen?
Absolutely. And then so we pick up the next day outside of this Egyptian tomb. And there's some flirty banter between Carter Hall and Shire after they have apparently spent a pretty fun evening together.
You can say that again. I feel like friend of the show Kevin Altieri would have appreciated the decision to allude to the things that they alluded to with some witty dialogue here.
Absolutely, yeah. Keeping it TVG while everyone knows what happened.
I was going to say, making it abundantly clear, if you know, you know.
missed the dress.
You didn't miss it last night. Anyway, it didn't seem like the right outfit for an archaeological dig.
You're right. The pants are fine. You look beautiful in anything.
It's your dig, Romeo. Lead the way.
Absolutely there. So yes, as they continue to sort of discuss things and they are looking at some of the different hieroglyphics on the walls of these tombs, including one that depicts a pharaoh and a lady pharaoh. What's the I don't know.
Queen, right? She's queen.
Just queen, right? That's like like Nefertiti or Cleopatra were just queens, right? I don't think they had a special term for it, but yes, the pharaoh and his queen, both who appear to have Thanagarian weaponry and wings in these paintings on the walls, as they're discussing things, and after eluding a couple of death traps, very Indiana Jones style stuff that we'll talk about certainly more in visuals in a few moments here. But as they're talking, and after Carter's shirt is damaged in one of the traps, he begins to disrobe again, and but this time it's not for any sexy times. It's because it's time to reveal the end game here, as he reveals that he believes himself to be the reincarnated Carter Hall or Katar Hall, and that Shaira is his reincarnated wife. And that they are the souls that from ancient Egypt, Thanagarians who crash landed in ancient Egypt and ruled over ancient Egypt, and I guess built the pyramids, as we get to in a second here. But we'll get to that as he reveals, and he tells her that he can be known as Katar Hall, or simply as Hawkman, as we get the big reveal of the classic comic book style look of Hawkman with the big orange cowl and the bare chest and everything. So he's in full regalia and it should also be noted around this time that Batman has followed Shaira to the tomb and is sort of tracking behind and maybe listening in on the conversation, as Shaira is at first kind of just immediately overcome by laughter, by hysterical laughter, as she can't believe what she's seeing, and she remarks that the worst part of it all is that she's going to have to listen to Batman tell her that he told her so. But Carter is very insistent that all of this is real, and he talks about how he had previously been to this very tomb before and discovered this Deus Ex Machina device called an Absorbicron, which apparently stores lots of psychic knowledge from whoever has touched it before. And when he touched it, he realized that he is Katar Hall, and that would mean that the ancient Shaira Hall must be the present day Hawk Girl, and that they are these reincarnated lovers from ancient Egypt.
I think you could say that the Absorbicron allows whoever touches it the ability to just spout off mountains of exposition.
It allows you to narrate a world history documentary here, as he discusses the technology that they brought, and that they were fair rulers who ruled with a kind hand and brought all of this advanced technology to the world, but eventually they were poisoned by a hidden jealous priest who didn't care for their rule, and so they were both killed, and with their deaths all of their technology was buried inside this tomb with no one the wiser, and therefore there was no sort of sudden technological advances in the ancient world. And so he's trying to convince her of this, and as Batman continues to listen in on on this conversation, he's also dealing with some of the death traps himself, and as he escapes one and lands on a ledge up above, a mysterious shadow man shows up, complete with the shadow bat ears, and pretty quickly overmatches Batman, who wasn't necessarily prepared to be dealing with this sort of threat, and seemingly knocks him off and sends him flying to his doom, and also takes the transmitter that Batman was using to track Hawkgirl through the tomb. And pretty soon after that, also makes his way, as Hawkman and Shaira are making their way through the tomb, Shayera still refuses to acknowledge this crazy theory of reincarnation as even remotely possible. And so Hawkman decides that she needs to just touch this magic Absorbicron, and then she'll know the truth. And that's when this mysterious shadow being sort of makes himself known, and we kind of figure out what exactly his role is here.
Rise and shine, my delusional friend.
Who are you?
Calls himself the Shadow Thief. He's a talker.
Unfortunately, she isn't. At least not so far.
What do you want from her?
Nothing. That was just for fun. I've been following you for weeks, waiting to be led to this treasure trove. These Thanagarian artifacts will go for millions on the black market, and I do so like money. But I need your archaeological expertise in order to disarm the tomb's final line of defense and enter the burial chamber, where, of course, the most valuable pieces lie.
Not going to happen.
Really? I think we've got room to negotiate. I understand that Thanagarians are stronger than humans. I wonder, how long will you last under my tender care?
Knock yourself out, jerkhole.
A little rude, darling, don't you think?
Stop, I'll help you!
Carter, no!
We get the reveal of just who this shadowy man is. He's not just a man, he's a thief. He's in fact the Shadow Thief. And who is the Shadow Thief? Mm-hmm. We don't really know. There's not a lot that's told.
Apparently there's a clue in the name.
That's right. Shayera knows who he is. She's apparently encountered him before. So
I wasn't sure about that, because Carter wakes up after Shayera. Mm-hmm. So I also thought, and Shayera mentions that Shadow Thief is a talker, so I also thought maybe he's just been monologuing for like 15 minutes while Carter was still passed out.
Very well could be true. Yes. Well, that would make sense also, because he mentions that he hasn't been able to get her to talk yet, and then proceeds to torture her, which provides Carter with some, he's not very happy about that. He's a little bit upset and furious and wants to know why he's torturing her. And Shadow Thief says, because it's fun. He loves to do evil things. He's an evil man. Carter is able to drag out of him just what his motivation is at this point. And we find out that he's been stalking him for some time now and has learned, how to get into and through all of the traps by stalking Carter as he's been on this archaeological dig. He's witnessed everything, and he's determined to get into the final burial. What do they call it? The burial
chamber?
Chamber. Yes, the burial chamber where all of the main riches are going to be. He knows that this is just sort of the appetizer from what they've gotten. So he needs Carter's help in order to break into the final portion of the chamber. He says absolutely not. And then, of course, like any good evil villain, Shadow Thief leverages the fact that he has Carter's true love there with him, and it threatens her life, threatens to hurt her, which convinces Carter that he must give in. Despite Shayera's protests, he allows Shadow Thief into the chamber. And it's at this point that it triggers one of the defense mechanisms for the tomb. Batman shows up and does his best to try and stop Shadow Thief at this point, but it's very clear that they're all kind of overwhelmed at this point. Batman's alive, by the way, guys. He's not dead. His costume's just... Right. Costume's just a little torn up. That's all. He's alive. So, Batman does some hand to hand combat, attempts to, all of our heroes are having trouble laying their hands on the Shadow Thief, who is able to escape into the chamber, begins packing some of the jewels away in a very funny sequence where he's just talking like, I don't know. I think Jack Skellington or something from the Nightmare Before Christmas. He reminds me of, there's a song where he sings, "What's this? What's this?" He's just like, "I'll take one of these and one of these, one of these." So he's like gathering the items and hiding them within his shadowy self. It's at this point that our heroes again begin to engage. They've engaged in a fight with these robotic zombie mummies also. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Of course. I guess this is some sort of technology that Thanagarians installed. It's not really explained why the giant statues have turned into zombie mummies, but sure. They're walking around. Batman and Hawkgirl and Hawkman are all unfortunately tied up with that, which allows Shadow Thief to continue to try and make way with a bunch of the jewels. They realize that the continued fighting and not stopping Shadow Thief is going to potentially cause the entire thing to collapse on them, which Shayera didn't help at all when she decided she was going to escape by pulling half of the wall off instead of allowing Batman to like break her out of her chains or something like that. But whatever.
Shayera does try to knock her loose at one point and the Shadow Thief stops him. So
I was going to say, but Shire has also never been gun shy. She'll shoot first, ask questions later. So, she aids in the teardown of the continually collapsing room. Shadow Thief looks like he's about to make his escape and is getting the upper hand on all of his villains. He has a verbal spar with Shire where he asks her, "Don't you know it's obvious at this point that you can only hit me when I want to be hit?"
"I'll take one of those, and one of those." "Haven't you figured it out yet, darling? I'm only solid when I want to be."
"Who said I want you solid?"
"Filthy witch."
And she instead lights up her mace, causing it to shine brightly, which then Hawkman shows up with a torch that he's got. And then Batman's got a pitchfork. Brick's got a grenade. And killed a man with a trident. Yeah, they all have fire-related weapons at this point, and they're shining the lights onto Shadow Thief, who I guess it's his only weakness. Even though Shadow's... I guess, yeah, light drives out dark. So, yeah, I guess that tracks, even though light also causes shadows. So, I don't know. But the Shadow Thief doesn't like the shadows. He creates a giant whirlwind tornado thing and disappears into the ground, which then causes a further collapse of our pyramid. Batman and Hawk... Batman is drops deep into the pit of whatever is below this... And Hawkman and Hawkgirl go flying after him. Hawkgirl is able to save Batman, of course, at the last second before he drops to his doom and begins flying out. And then Hawkman realizes the Absorbicron is the last chance that he has at convincing Shire that she's his long lost love. So he goes headfirst in, flying after it. Hawkgirl, getting Batman to safety, flies after him, screaming at him, telling him to let it go. He demands that he has to go get it, but Hawkgirl introduces him to her right fist, knocks him out, and forces him to fly out before the entire pyramid collapses on both of them. And much to Hawkman's chagrin, the Absorbicron is hidden beneath the buried rubble. And it seems like all is lost at this point, but we get a little postscript here with a conversation between our two lovers.
"Lost forever.
It nearly killed you. That machine was designed to telepathically communicate with Thanagarians. It was too powerful for an unshielded human mind."
"John Jones is a telepath. Perhaps he can help you sort through the information."
"I don't need any help. I know the truth. We're the reincarnations of Katar and Shire Hall, and I love you."
"No, oh, you can't love me, Carter. You don't even know me."
"Your favorite color is teal. You could eat Quartian oysters every day, even though they give you heartburn. You get up early because you love the sunrise, and nothing's more important to you than fighting for those who can't fight for themselves. You'll see the truth. Eventually. It's destiny."
"It's not. It's just the Absorbicron."
"I've waited thousands of years for us to find each other. I can wait a little longer."
Carter is, of course, very, very verbose and sad that that the magic memory machine has been lost, and Hawkgirl tries to once again sort of explain to him that this is it's a machine that just collects knowledge. It's not a magic stone. It just collects knowledge and then feeds that back to the brain of whoever touches it.
It's plus, like Brainiac's thing, right?
Exactly.
It's like the Brainiac orbs.
Exactly. And on top of that, it was made for Thanagarians to interact with, which, as we've established previously in this continuity, Thanagarians have much stronger minds than humans do. So, at least when it comes to psychic energy and stuff. So, she tries to assure him that all he's seeing is someone else's memories imprinted on his brain. But he just won't. Quite believe her, and in fact begins to spout off facts that perhaps someone that only knew Shaira intimately would know, like her favorite foods and colors and things that feel very true to her spirit. So he tells her that he's waited several lifetimes, and he's willing to wait a little bit longer to collect on this whirlwind romance that they've had over the millennia. So he flies off, and Batman and Hawkgirl have a little bit of a heart-to-heart themselves.
How stupid do you think I am?
Scale of 1 to 10.
Funny. I meant this.
Hall was the one I didn't trust.
Right. That's why you planted this bug. How much did you hear?
A bunch of nonsense about reincarnation and destiny.
Maybe it isn't nonsense.
If you really believe that.
Sort of echoing the scene earlier with Green Lantern and Batman. Her, if you really believe that, and then trails off and walks away, and then we sort of get this final shot that pans back down to the wreckage of the tomb, and we see one sarcophagus which has two faces on the lid, and inside of it we see that there are two bodies holding hands. So that's our little bit of a cliffhanger, a little bit of a seed of doubt has been planted as to whether or not all of this reincarnation business could be true. So to be continued.
Yes, indeed. All right, Liam, let's break down our plot scores. Overall, it's an interesting part one. I will mm-hmm. say that. If this was never paid off, and part of me, again, I think we talked about last week where I've watched season one and two of Justice League Unlimited, I think far more times than I ended up watching season three mm-hmm. In my life. So at first I was like, wait a minute, isn't there a part where there's a flashback and they reveal who Shadow Thief has like reincarnate? I was like, where mm-hmm. is that here? And I was like, wait, isn't there only one? Does Hawkman come back? And then, yeah, Hawkman returns. So spoiler alert, not for another, 9 episodes do we get the payoff for this essentially, mm-hmm. but, we do get a payoff and a explanation about everything further down the line. So as a part one of that part two or two part story, and from what I'm remembering of that two part story, it's a good part one. There's a cliffhanger, a lot of exposition for the episode, a mm-hmm. lot of dialogue, a lot of walking around. A lot of stuff that has to be set up for that payoff of episode two. So I would say I'm not going to give a conditional score for my episode based on what happens in part two. But what I would like to see in part two or the second episode, episode 11, would be to have much more action and be far less dialogue heavy, but I'm not remembering. I feel like there's still a lot of exposition and history lessons that go on in that episode. So I guess we'll see. I think it's interesting. I like the fact that they decided to introduce this version of Hawkman after mm-hmm. sort of resisting. I like the fact that you melded the two histories, the Golden and the Silver Age stories mm-hmm. of Hawkman and Hawkgirl together. into this incarnation of Hawkman. I mean, I think most people are familiar. If you're a DC hero, DC fan, you're probably familiar with Hawkman, but you're maybe more familiar with the fact that there's not one Hawkman backstory. There's all these like weird, he's either an intergalactic cop. He's the long lost, you know, reincarnated Egyptian pharaoh. Is there a third one? I guess.
I think there's ones where they were just like, he was just like a guy who owned a museum and then put on bird wings to fight crime. Like,
right. So we truly have a running of the gamut there of different origin and stories. But I think I like the idea of incorporating this. It furthers that story thread of Shaira and John. And even though, as we alluded to in this episode, or as is alluded and we talked about, we know that in some form or fashion, they at least engage together at one additional time, creating an offspring. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that they end up together? We don't know. But it does further this, okay, will they, won't they, classic Ross and Rachel, Jim and Pam storyline of will they get together? How are they going to get together? You know, story. So adding the guy that's like the cool boyfriend into the mix to like throw a wrench into the potential romance when there's already this other wrench that's in there with Vixen being the in the love triangle. I love that aspect of it also. But there's a lot of talking in this episode and not a lot of action. There's a lot of Batman funny business. I love his lines are great. He's got a lot of good comedic timing in the episode. But it's a lot of setup and with minimal payoff, I feel like. So minimal payoff for this episode, at least. So for all those reasons, I ended up with a 6 out of 10 for my score. It's not bad. It's not a bad episode. There are things I think about it that are at least entertaining, but it does feel like because it had so much to set up and you're establishing this Hawkman character as a different Hawkman from the Invader Hawkman, you really had to establish who this guy is and what the backstory is and all that. So a lot of time was spent on that, I feel like.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I don't totally disagree. There is a lot of setting up for the next episode here for sure. I think what I liked about it is just one, it's not a regular locale that we're in. We just getting, you know, it having a little Indiana Jones type, adventure in a Egyptian tomb is very unique with all the death traps and everything. Like I said, we'll certainly talk about that more in visuals, but I just like the setting of it. I like the idea of it. I do think it's kind of an interesting swing to introduce another Hawkman after all this time. I think we probably talked about that when we reviewed Starcrossed way back when, but there was a time when the Hrothalic character was supposed to be Katar Hall Hawkman. And then because they wanted him to be a more overtly villainous character, that DC said no. And so they kind of reworked. And I think Hrothalic even is like an amalgam of Katar Hall. So, and they said, as far as they were concerned for a long time, that just was their Hawkman. But I think when they got this last batch of episodes and they were kind of looking for what's still on the board for stuff we haven't really played with yet, I think they just couldn't resist the idea of doing the more classic archetypal Hawkman story. So I think it's fun to bring in a new character when you already have 50 some heroes and theoretically you could have focused on any one of them for an episode. Giving another character and sort of deepening Shaira's backstory is interesting. And I like kind of how messy her and John are at this point. Like, there's clearly some unresolved feelings. Imagine like if anyone's ever had to like regularly see their ex, I think that's a pretty, it's a pretty relatable emotion that these, and the way that you know how to press their buttons and they know how to press your button, that it's just this really weird vibe. So I like that their sort of interplay in this episode. And as I mentioned, I got a pretty big kick out of how much of a needler Batman is in this episode with both of them as well. So yeah, I think there's some really interesting building blocks here. I don't necessarily know if this is a great standalone episode because it's so exposition heavy. And I think in the next episode, they do more flashbacks, but we actually just see kind of the scenes unfold as opposed to somebody just narrating. So I think that's probably a part of it too. So I think, yeah, these are good building blocks, and it's, you know, turning over a lot of stones that I think a lot of DCAU fans coming into this final season wouldn't necessarily have thought would have been ever turned over. So I think it's cool and kind of exciting to still be able to introduce new characters and new corners of the DC universe this far in. But yeah, it's a building block episode for sure.
Absolutely. All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be visuals and animation. And this week's animation provided by the DR Movie Co., as it was for last week's episode. And then, as you mentioned, our director of the episode, good friend of the show, Mr. Dan Reba, responsible for this week's animation, or direction, rather. So let's talk about what we liked, anything we didn't like. As I mentioned at the top, right off the bat, I love the cold opens that are starting with these giant action sequences. We talked about it last week with the car chase, with Luthor being, you know, chased by an army of police officers just bearing down on his truck as he escapes, tries to escape them. And then this week, just fisticuffs. I mean, taking full advantage of that being on Cartoon Network thing, close fist to the face, Batman getting socked in the mouth, them fighting back hard against the extremists. Just really, really cool action there. Unfortunately, we don't have a ton of continued action because it's a lot of dialogue that from that point on. I do like the fact that they gave Shira a nice, like, going out dress, and they're really driving home that point that, like, they did everything but draw drool on John's face. I feel like at that point, like, that was the point of him, or his eyes bugging out or his jaw dropping and hitting the floor, like, you know, like a wolf in a cartoon or something like that. So you're not going to do that, obviously, but they really drove the point home of that this was supposed to be her getting all dolled up. And it was a unique character look. I don't think we've seen her other than her, I guess, the end of the way that she looked at the end of Starcrossed. I don't think she was wearing a mini dress there, but you know, usually don't see her in those situations. So there was, I feel like also they sort of mirrored that sequence where you kind of have the side profile of them looking closely at each other. And just as you did at Wayne Manor's, they kind of kissed in that last sequence. Which itself was like a callback, I think, to when they were on the Watchtower and that same sort of side profile. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing some continuity here in the way that they're showing things. Also reminded me, gave me a little bit of Empire Strikes Back vibes with like Princess Leia and Han Solo in the Hoth rebel base, like while they're bickering back and forth, having this witty repartee that, you know, this like sexual tension is there between the two of them, but they just, these crazy kids just can't get together. So I loved that, the Batman popping up at multiple random times to be the comedic punchline there was great. Speaking of Batman, that first sequence where Batman sets off the trap and the spikes come out of the wall and he just kind of casually jumps and dodges and like shifts his hips back and forth as he's jumping through the spikes. I watched that sequence like three times. It's done so, so smoothly and well. I just love the way that Batman, like, it makes it look like he's doing it incredibly effortlessly. And, you know, he's not expending much energy to do it. But as these spikes continue to come out of the wall, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, is he gonna die? But just the way that they just animated him, just kind of being like, eh, no big deal, like, been here, done that before. Like, he's no stranger to death traps in, yes, like archaeological digs, as we've seen before, you know. So clearly he's an old pro at this, but thumbs down on the CGI usage for the Thanagarian ship, which there's a scene where we're recounting the past and how they got stuck on Earth, stranded on Earth as Thanagarians. It ages like milk. It looks bad. Sticks out like a sore thumb. I felt like the scene where it was sitting there static at the end of the episode, when they open up the tomb and it's kind of sitting there, still done in CGI, but it was a little less obvious, I think, because of the way that the scene was lit. But when it's trying to land, everything around it is like dark and it's night, and it looks like it's so bright. They didn't shade it. You know, they weren't doing shading on it. It just does not look good, in my opinion. So thumbs down for that, as is the norm. But the little CGI effect that they used to show Shadow Thief kind of, I don't know what he's doing. He's like sticking his hand into their brains. I don't know.
Yeah, some kind of phasing, like I guess John does, but it's swirlier.
Yeah, I like that effect. I thought that looked neat. Like that's it gets the point across. He's doing some sort of damage to them, obviously. The Absorbicron kind of looked cool. I'll give him that. But yeah, I guess the only other things to talk about are that I'd like to hear your thoughts on. Obviously, we mentioned this is the more classic Carter Hall Hawkman look. Mm-hmm. Felt like they fit it right into the DCAU look. I didn't think that there were his mask or helmet fits him a little bit better. I feel like it mm-hmm. looks like it's a mask or a helmet, as sort of just being like a Batman half mask that like, it looks like it's just bigger and bulkier, like, which is what I feel like that helmet should be. If it's a helmet, like it's not mm-hmm. a mask, it's a helmet. So it should fit more like an ancient battle helmet versus a mask. So I like that they made it a little bit bigger. And how about those zombie mummies, robot zombie mummies?
Yeah, those are kind of wacky. Would the implication then be that like the legend of how mummies got started in the DCAU, like if those exist as like a folklore monster and then eventually something for movies and stuff, is that there were actual like robot guardians with messed up faces in every Egyptian tomb in the world that maybe other actual archaeologists encountered? Was the weird lady in Avatar one of these?
I'd say that's a good theory, and until proven otherwise, I'd say it's absolutely 100% canon.
Okay, I mean, these didn't like suck the youth out of anyone like that one did to Ra's al Ghul, so maybe maybe not, but trying to keep track of our overlapping Egyptian mysticism and science and whatever, what have you. Sure. But I think that all the stuff in the tomb is really fun. You already touched on the death traps with the darts and the spikes and the like the quicksand tornado that Batman almost gets sucked into is really fun. I like the way all of Shadow Thieves' powers are sort of shown off. I like the first two sequences where he first attacks Batman. I like where he like mimics their actual shadow. Same with Shayera. I guess before you reveal what he actually is, when maybe it's supposed to feel more mystic in those first two attacks before you find out he's just a guy with shadow powers in the third act. But I really liked that. I liked the visualization of all his powers. I do really like that Hawkman design, and they really nailed, I thought, like the, like he looks a little bit insane, and that is like very pretty accurate. Like the Hawkman suit always has these like big round white eyes with these tiny little like black dots for, you know, in the center of him. So he always looks like he's really prying those eyelids open while he's and it's just, I feel like that gives a little bit to like the idea of this guy. I don't know if that's an intentional choice or not. Like I said, it's pretty accurate to how the suit always looked in the comics to me, but where he is just like a little bit insane, and he made the suit himself, and you know, he's a little bit out there. So I like that. I like that Hawkman design a lot. Yeah, fun to see Shiera in action as well. So yeah, there's a lot of fun visual things. I like the what little bits we see of the flashbacks. I like the sort of melding of like some of the symbols and iconography that are often associated with ancient Egyptian tombs and architecture. Like that, it's not a cross. I don't know what you call it. It's the Dr. Fate symbol.
It's not a Horcrux. What do you call it? That's an upside down cross. An Ankh, A-N-K-H,
I think. I believe so. But that's like on Katar's belt when he lands. And then, you know, you see them build up the pyramids, and they have these very like feathery golden headdresses that, you know, don't look dissimilar from how oftentimes the sort of pharaoh headdresses are depicted in various, you know, movies and television shows. So I like the idea that they very quickly like influenced architecture and design and like religious iconography,
mm-hmm,
just by virtue of them, you know, falling out of the sky. Like, of course they were worshipped as gods. They, right, you know, for that time period. So I think that's kind of a fun little visual note to put, not everything, but one, but at least a few of their things and their general iconography, that when they show up is kind of immediately adopted by the, you know, the tribe that that believes them to be their rulers and everything. So I think that's kind of a neat touch as well. So yeah, I think there's a lot of fun stuff in this episode. I love the little snippet of the battle we get with the Lord Havoc and the Extremists at the start is really fun.
Mm-hmm.
As mentioned, all those characters are sort of vaguely based on Marvel heroes. Dream Slayer is probably like the most overt, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like, he's a guy with a flaming head. Firehead man, like Dormammu is, but the rest of them are pretty good. There's little notes like Lord Havoc. He's not in a green suit, but he's in all of his armor, and then he has like those two little like circle bits that hold the cloak on or whatever, mm-hmm, around his neck. There's some very Kirby-ish stuff in there as well, which I think is fun. And some of the way their different powers line up and all that's a lot of fun. So overall, I ended up settling on an 8 out of 10 for my visuals.
Nice. I went just 1 point lower. I went with a 7 out of 10. Two additional things. I will also second your appreciation for the Shadow Thief appearance. Also, like, mm-hmm, they went with the Golden Age, or I guess it might be the Silver Age version of him, which is just sort of that dark silhouette of a man, as opposed to the more modern version that he, mm-hmm, has like a human face and like a beard.
Yes.
I think he's much more menacing and looks much more interesting being this translucent gray shadow man. The other thing I'll mention is the background designers did an incredible job with everything inside the tomb, which is like, you know, feels like 50% of where our episode it takes place is inside the tomb. The backgrounds, you get all this hieroglyphic stuff and the imagery and the design that went into kind of, you know, making this tomb look and feel like an authentic Egyptian pyramid. I absolutely loved it. So great job by everybody involved there. So
yeah, and I did want to also just one last thing mention, the actual Carter Hall design. He has this like real archetypal like old movie serial look to him
for sure.
I immediately was just like looking up old Hollywood actors, and like this was maybe a little bit of Cary Grant. And also, I mean, maybe I was just seeing it because it's, you know, an archaeologist who runs dodging death traps in an Egyptian tomb, but I thought maybe I saw a little Harrison Ford in there.
A little Harry Ford in there. Yeah, I could see that for sure. Yeah, it would be very difficult to do that character in this modern age and not at least give some sort of nod or reference, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And did you say our dynamic music partners were once again responsible for this week?
I believe it's just Michael McQuistion on his own credited for this one.
All righty. So Mr. McQuistion responsible for this week. And Yeah, I think we open right away with our fight sequence, like we said, and those are the cold opens. If you're gonna open up with a fist to the face or a couple fists to the face, you got to have some music that's ramping up the intensity of the scene. So I enjoyed the music that accompanies that. It's generally what you would hear in a lot of the fight sequences, I would say. I don't think it's necessarily unique in any sort of way, but it certainly sets the tone for what that fight is going to be. So we see the back and forth between the extremists and the League. And then the main things that stood out to me were there's some music when we were first introduced to Carter Hall as he's sort of trying to make his move on Shaira initially. There's a real lack of music actually in the elevator, which I like, which is interesting because it really makes you focus on the actual dialogue that's occurring in that scene. But once Hawkman puts on his helmet and reveals that he's invited Shaira to the underground pyramid under false pretenses, I love that little, it's like a little Hawkman theme. It's just like a little thing that's played, and then that sort of plays in a similar tone as he's sort of giving the background of the characters and what he learned through the Absorbicron, and then the crescendo of the reveal of the mummies holding hands at the end of the scene in the sarcophagi. Really, really good. It's similar, mm-hmm. has a similar crescendo, and I thought that crescendo at the end of the scene and zooming in on their hands holding was really, really powerful.
Yeah, it's really. I don't. Can music be cinematic? I don't know the exact direction. Definition of that term. Sure. I know it's overused quite a bit. When
symphonic, it's like a symphony. I don't know.
Yes. But like I feel a lot of this feels like a movie score to me, especially when they're going through the tomb, as you mentioned, when we're hearing the flashback. There's this real like Lawrence of Arabia quality mm-hmm. to the music, I think, and it's really, really well done, and it gives it that really epic scope of like a, you know, a big epic old film would have. So I really enjoyed that. And the when you're kind of playing with the idea of reincarnation and is this all true, and you bring in that sort of, you know, eerie Enya choir thing at the end there with, you know, when they linger on the shot of the two mummies holding hands, I think is really well done as well. So for all those reasons, I ended up giving music another pretty strong 8 out of 10.
Yeah. I went with just 1 point lower, with a 7 out of 10. So, both of us given pretty high marks there for the music. I think I really would like to hear, hopefully, those same musical cues come back in our follow-up episode. I'll be listening for those. But of course, you have a character that, like Hawkman, that's focused. His whole power set obviously is flying and carrying a mace. So hopefully there's more of that sort of soaring, triumphant soundtrack to come. And also, I think the only other note that I had was as he's descending to try and initially catch Batman and then catch the Absorbicron, there's mm-hmm. some real intense music that plays there. And then when Shaira clocks him in the face with a closed fist, it sort of abruptly crescendos there too. So yeah, some good music this week from our composer, Mr. McQuestion. All right, Liam, let's wrap things up here with our final category of the day. We're going to talk about our voice cast. Another one this week where we don't have a ton of voice actors to talk about because we didn't have a huge cast for the episode, but plenty to focus on and discuss with our review of this week's voice actors.
Yeah. So that's right. And just very briefly, we do have Gina Torres returning as Vixen. She's literally just in that opening scene. there long enough to have a little dialogue with John, and then maybe show off that she's a little bit uncomfortable with how protective John is being of Shaira there. And then playing, I think he's the voice of both of our extremists that have any dialogue, although I think Phil Lamar plays Gorgon's grunts. But playing both Dream Slayer and Lord Havoc is the great John DiMaggio, who we've talked about 100 times on the show, more so in our Elseworlds episodes, because he is the voice of Aquaman on The Brave and the Bold and a million other things. But he does lead to a line that I know got used a lot in the Toonami ad bumpers for this final season of Justice League, which is the, "You think you can stop me with a bubble?" And then, tries to power out. And when he fails, John Stewart responding with, "It's a really good bubble." So fun hearing Mr. DiMaggio, even if it's in a pretty brief role.
Yeah, nice little cameo for him. And as you mentioned, that line is pretty good.
Absolutely. And then, we get right to our main guest star of the episode, voicing Carter Hall, Hawkman, and maybe one other guy. Mr. James Remar, as the voice of Carter Hall here, previously had also voiced the Manhunters in Blackest Night, and also done a lot of other voice work. Also plays Raiden in the live action Mortal Kombat film, or at least one of them.
Okay, interesting.
I think the one everyone agrees is like the worst one, but not because he's in it. He's he has such a gravelly, commanding voice. I really enjoy him as Carter Hall, but it's also kind of one of those ones where he has such a distinct and interesting voice that I can't believe we'd only used him once up to this point.
when Carter Hall is introduced, his voice is so deep and commanding. It's like, holy cow, this guy's got pipes.
Mm-hmm. You're like, wow, this guy could have gotten a look for Lex Luthor or Grodd or Derek Powers or somebody across one of these shows. And maybe that's just at the time, maybe he wasn't looking for voice acting work or whatever. But yeah, he has such a fun gravitas to him. And he gets to do a lot of talking in this episode, as mentioned, because he's narrating the flashbacks and explaining all of this backstory to Shaira. And then also, spoiler alert for a 18-year-old cartoon, he's also the voice of the Shadow Thief, which will have a pretty important reveal tied to that in the next episode. But he also gets to play this really sinister, you can tell it's the same person if you're listening for it, but I don't necessarily know that at the time I would have noticed right away that it's the same guy. So he gets to the... He gets to do a lot and really kind of flex his voice acting muscles here.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that I did not remember until reading the DCAU wiki again, not having watched these episodes for several years, mm-hmm. That there was a kind of link between the two characters there. So it's distinct enough for his performance as Shadow Thief, where I don't know if they pitched it up a little bit. It just doesn't sound as deep. I don't know. But yeah, he did it enough. It did enough to differentiate himself where I didn't pick up on it from watching the episode. So I think that's certainly a credit to him there. I feel like because he has the lion's share of the exposition to carry with all of the Absorbicron information and, sharing all of that information and, disseminating their past. And then he's also trying to flirt with her and trying to get with her to go on the date with him before that and all that. I think he does a great job. As you mentioned, it's a shame we only get a couple of episodes out of this particular character, but at least they gave him enough in both episodes to really ultimately be the star. So mm-hmm. We do get a lot out of him, so be interested to see if the follow-up episode he does as good or is given more emotion. I don't say that he's pretty positive dude, I'll just say that. Mm-hmm. He's willing to wait for her at the end, even in his disappointment of the Absorbicron being destroyed. Doesn't let it get him down. That line, I think, at the end where he's like, I've waited this long to be reunited with my love. I'm willing to be patient and wait a little bit longer or something like that. I thought that delivery for the end of the episode, really, really good.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think he does a great job. And like I said, really shows off his versatility immediately with the dual role there. And then all we have left here is our three main leaguers of the episode. As mentioned, we have Phil LaMarr playing Green Lantern. We have Kevin Conroy as Batman, and we have Maria Canales Barrera as Shayera. Obviously, this is really more Shayera's episode than anyone else, so we'll save her for last. But Phil LaMarr, again, really funny in like how uncomfortable and like off balance he is in this role in this episode, both in the scene where he sees her, you know, dolled up for the first time and is sort of caught off guard because he never saw her dressed like that before, and then also the next scene where he's trying to kind of be Mr. Bravado and I'm gonna go have a talk with this guy, and she kind of cuts him off and puts him in his place immediately, and he's kind of right back to being really sheepish and uncomfortable, and all the way through to that interaction that he and Batman have with where he's, you know, this isn't how this is supposed to be going, you know, she and I are supposed to be together, and you know, again, as mentioned, Batman immediately throwing it back in his face and going, well, if you really believed that, why are you still with Vixen? So it's creating this really interesting like interpersonal tension between John and Shayera, and then you have Batman is kind of the third party who's a friend to both of them and is just a little bit sick of having to deal with both of them and their weird energy around each other.
Yeah, it is. I mean, between the interaction between Phil LaMarr's Green Lantern, Kevin Conroy's just impeccable timing and delivery as Batman, and then of course Maria Canales is Hawkgirl, the scenes with the three of them in them, and then Batman interacting with each of them, Batman interacting with I love the bit with Hawkgirl, by the way, with the having the or discovering the tracer on her mace at the end and giving Batman like the what for because of it, which, by the way, the DCAU wiki pointed out, and it is factual. You can go back and see in one of the scenes, they flash the bottom of Hawkgirl's mace ever so quickly, and you can see the little bat symbol on it. So the detail that they went to the lengths to make sure that, you know, you could, if you blink and you miss it, but you could go back and find that the tracer was there the entire time. I loved that attention to detail. Mm-hmm. But yeah, their interactions, Phil LaMarr's is just, like you said, uncomfortable is the word. Like, he's uncomfortable in the elevator. He's trying to be possessive, even though he has no right to be. He's uncomfortable on the street in front of Vixen, trying to like convince Hawkgirl that maybe he shouldn't go on this date. Like, or she shouldn't go on this date. Like, he's just, you know, he's in a bad spot and can't figure out what to do. Like, his brain is fried ever since he found out that he had offspring with Hawkgirl, and now he just doesn't know how to act. So it's pretty funny to see that. And as you mentioned, the late great Mr. Kevin Conroy, man, so good. He gets to just be like the guy that delivers the punchline in the episodes. Mm-hmm. He gets to be the, you know, he gets to just needle everybody a little bit and be sarcastic, and you know, the line where he says, you know, glad I caught you two before you did something stupid. Just great timing there. And then when Hawkgirl says, is the line where she says, do you think I'm stupid, or do you think I'm stupid at the end? Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, if you're asking on a scale of 1 to 10, so good. Like, the delivery is perfect. It's so fun to see him kind of get to play this like minor comedic relief role. Mm-hmm. for the he's it's almost like he's the Flash for the episode, but he's not playing it like totally the Flash. He's playing it like Batman giving the comedic lines.
Yes, he's completely dry, and you know, he's not cracking wise necessarily, but he's just so matter of factly stating things. Like when he's going over the list of the different types of Hawkgirl hate message boards and how many there are, and how, you know, Carter Hall keeps getting banned from them, he's so like, it's so funny, and he's just speaking very matter of factly, like the same way you would hear him speak about, you know, any other sort of you know, whatever generic superhero stuff you might hear him talk about in any of these episodes. And yeah, he's so funny in that bit. The glad I caught you before you did something stupid as he walks into the elevator is a great, greatly delivered line.
Alfred must have taught him well on how to like subtle, sarcastic one-liners.
He learned from the best in that way. But yes, it's a great, great understated. And we talked about that a little bit last week with Clancy Brown about how do you find an episode? How many episodes do we find where we can still be surprised by the greatness of one of these, you know, one of these actors that we talk about so often? But here, Kevin Conroy is, you know, several years into his run as Batman, and several years, quite frankly, into the run of this podcast. And here we are still finding like, oh yeah, he's also really funny. Like he also has like an incredible dry delivery for all of these punchlines that work because Batman is so dry and humorless in how he's delivering them. So great job by Mr. Conroy, unsurprisingly. And then yes, as mentioned last but not least, Maria Canales Barrera as Shayera. Another episode that I think she gets to stretch her legs a little bit more. You know, she's in a lot of these episodes, but so often, I think especially you think about those early seasons, she's just there to yell and hit things. Mm-hmm. So these later season episodes where we get to delve into more of her different sides, like her being, again, her very much enjoying how put off John is by all of this and trying to make him uncomfortable and trying to make him nervous and trying to make him jealous, and her telling both, you know, and then kind of being very defiant and almost like, you know, she's dealing with Batman, who's almost kind of in like a, you know, a weird, like, you know, best friend or brother type of role. Like we talked about that last week with her dynamic with her and Flash as well, but that she has that dynamic where she's like, you know, you're not the boss of me. I know what I'm doing. And, you know, you guys can screw you guys. I'm going to do what I want. And then when the big reveal happens and James Remar's Carter Hall is regaling her with this history and demanding she call him Hawkman and Katar and all this stuff. And she just starts laughing and she's like, and she just can't believe what's happening to her and the absurdity of it all. And then, you know, she talks about how the worst part is that I'm going to have to listen to Batman and GL tell me that they told me so. Like, she's like, of course the, you know, the one I meet a guy and he turns out to be an insane stalker who made his own wings. Like, of course this would happen to me. Like, she has such a like resigned sort of sarcastic wit about everything in this episode too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she gets, like I said, she gets to stretch her legs in a way that maybe we haven't gotten to see as much to this point. So it's a lot of fun for her as well, I think.
Yeah, I would agree 100% with you. She gets to show a little bit more emotion. It's not just, I'm going to beat this thing with my mace. I'm not just screaming or even in the case of last week, just kind of delivering exposition or talking to herself. She's, you know, she gets to show some emotion, some exasperation, some, as we mentioned, she's very clearly trying to make John jealous. Her character is in the episode. So they give her this dialogue where she has to sort of sing-songy, somewhat tease him a little bit and needling him about him clearly being falling over himself over the way she looks and reminding him that he's dating somebody else. So yeah, it's a great performance from Miss Canales. And I would agree with you. Perhaps maybe other than Starcrossed, which obviously I think we talked about is maybe her best performance from the entire series. I think this is a good follow up to that because she does get to show quite a bit of emotion and a variety of different range of different things. And her interaction with Mr. Remar's Carter Hall, there is some general chemistry there. So even if initially it's discussed, there's some general chemistry and you can kind of buy into that. Well, maybe they are reincarnated lovers just based on their, you know, their interactions. So yeah, really, really good performance from the entire cast, but certainly from our star.
Absolutely. And I think for all those reasons, I ended up giving voice acting another very strong 8 out of 10.
Yeah. I went with the same exact score. I went with an 8 out of 10 as well for mine. So yeah, it's a good overall episode. I guess we can total up our scores here at the end. And totaling everything up here, I end up with a 28 out of 40. What about you?
Yeah, and I'm a couple points higher in this case and ended at a 31 out of 40. So as we always do, we can talk about rewatchability here. I mean, yeah, this is one, it's just a fun little episode by itself. But yes, it has pretty major implications for the rest of this this season. As I said, all these characters come back. This episode's directly followed up on, and it has pretty major implications for the future of the Green Lantern Hawkgirl pairing, as well as the Green Lantern Vixen pairing, which is all touched on in the next episode as well. So yeah, obviously you gotta watch this one if you're watching this final or rewatching this final season of JLU.
Yeah, undoubtedly it's a must watch. It gets followed up on it. It's a part of the whole John and Shaira Hawk Lantern romance. So yeah, it's a must watch for those reasons. And as we said, there's like payoff essentially that comes out with Batman Beyond later on. So we know that it's all connected in that way. So you gotta know the details, the backstory. It's important to know it. So, and this is a big portion of that. So it's part one, essentially, of two parts. We don't get the other part till much later on here, but yes, certainly two thumbs up for both of us.
Absolutely.
All right, we almost begin to wrap things up for the day. Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in. We will ask once again, as we do each and every week, for your support for the podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, there are several different ways to do so. You can leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. A 5-star one helps us out immensely, as does leaving a little blurb. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, leave a little blurb. If you leave a little review and we read it here on the air, we'll even reach out to you. And if you live within the continental United States, we'll send you a little thank you gift just for taking the time to do so. So leave us a review, and you can subscribe to us, of course, on your favorite podcast apps or on the Pod Tower on YouTube, as we mentioned at the top of the program, at youtube.com/thepodtower. You can also follow us on social media at DCAU Review on Twitter/X. We're on Instagram and we're on Threads. You can find our Facebook page also. We don't update that anymore because they made us delink it from Instagram for some reason. So not the best way to get in contact with us or follow us, but hey, we'll take the support whichever way you want to offer it. And then last but not least, those are all the free ways to support us. If you would like to become a monthly supporter of the podcast, which we have several of those every month, we thank our supporters for supporting the pod. You can join them by checking out the link in the show notes, or you can pick yourself up a piece of merchandise from our show store. All of that in the details on your favorite podcast app in the show notes. Liam, we will be continuing next week with yet another episode of Justice League Unlimited as we roll on through the month here. Why don't we do that little thing where we drop a little preview about what it is we'll be covering next week?
That is right, and we are picking up at the very next episode in this final season's order, and that is the episode Chaos at the Earth's Core, an episode that... It further deepens this budding secret society story a bit, and it also gave our creators an excuse to visit another yet unexplored corner of an often forgotten corner of the DC universe, that being the realm of the Warlord and Skartaris. So some real deep cut DC stuff coming at you next week with that, and also heavy focus on Stargirl and Supergirl next week, so some characters we haven't seen in a while. So definitely something to look forward to next week.
That's right. This episode will go down as, I believe, the final new episode of Justice League Unlimited that I ever watched. For whatever reason, I ended up skipping this episode on the original watch through on the DVDs. Came back to it sometime later, and from my recollection, I actually kind of dug it. So interested to see if that holds up and holds true as we review that next week. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on that next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.